say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want.
Hello everyone and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo and oh man, do we have a great show for you today. Listen, of course, there are always great shows. It makes it easy for me because the truth of the matter is if I get a great guest and they got a great book, you know, like this one, you know, the new ROI, return on individuals going behind the numbers, it makes it easier for me to do a show like this, and it's a great show. And let me just say something about this book, because I read books, you know, I read a book a week for the show. And then you run across a book, and sometimes a book will actually cause such consternation in me that it begs more questions and that I can't have the answers that I want. But the book is so important because there are so many of you who are CEOs, business owners on different levels. Some of you work with Fortune 500 companies and there is a movement of how do we measure our human capital? How do we measure the people that work in our business? How do we measure them? I mean, we're all in agreement that they're important, right? Right? I mean, we have this country, the U.S., is, I would say, predominantly a service industry country, meaning that I think we do more things in service than we do in products and those type of things. But regardless of whether it's service or product, in order for us to be profitable, it requires people to interact with other people in order for that success to occur. Now, if we don't have good people, you're limited in success. But if your people don't like where they work, you're also going to be limited in success. So that begs the question, how do we, A, get people to be engaged, whatever that word means, and we're going to work on that today. How do we get them engaged enough to want to do the job that we want them to do? How do we measure their effectiveness? How does that measurement turn into productivity? Where do they fit in the scheme of business valuation? Right? I mean, because let's be honest. I mean, my guest is an expert business valuator. I have a friend, Jeff Snell, who's been on the show, who is a business valuation expert as well, and is a business broker. The fact of the matter is, if you take away all the employees of the business and you just tried to sell the business, what do you really have? Probably not much. But yet, what is their value? Quantifiably. See, those are the questions that we're going to try to answer today. I don't know that we will, but my guest, Dave Bookbinder, and myself are going to attempt to take on the challenge of answering some of these questions today. But before we get to Dave and his book, The New ROI, Return on Individuals Going Behind the Numbers. Before we do that, let's do what we do every week, all right? We're four-part people. We're physical, mental, emotional, spiritual people, right? And as you know on this show, we have heard it over and over again. If we are not growing in all four of these areas, we are dying because we do not stay stagnant. So we need to be doing something every day in all four of these areas in order for us to continue in growth. And what I have you do is I have you evaluate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being, ugh, 10 being it just doesn't get any better, 5 being average in each one of these areas of how you're doing, all right? So for instance, in the physical area, if you were to evaluate yourself and getting enough exercise, eating right, drinking enough water, getting enough sleep, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you say you're doing? Now listen, if you're a 2, don't worry. Treat it as a starting place. This is where I can improve from, right? If you're a 7, good for you, you could still improve, okay? A little bit more, right? So what do you need to tweak physically in order to move yourself to the next level? So if you're 2, how do you get to 2.5? If you're 7, maybe get to a 7.25. What could you change, right? That's your first number. Second number is your mental intellectual number, right? Can't be on the couch, being a couch potato, just hoping you absorb some sort of knowledge and information that's going to make you better. No, you have to be an active participant in your knowledge and your growth, understanding how you can do your work better, how you understand you can do your life better, how you can understand how you can interact with others better, wisdom, knowledge, understanding. How would you say you're doing actively wise in that area, scale of 1 to 10? Okay, that's your second number. Third number is the emotional number. And it's interesting that Dave and I have had the same guest on our shows. Dave's show, by the way, is called Behind the Numbers. We've had Dr. Troy Hall, and Dr. Troy Hall and I have been on the same page with this thing about the emotional part of our being. And that is, we see it in two parts, and that is this. The first part is, how well are you able to control your emotions under stress and pressure? You ever been hangry and not keep it together? How about when that person cuts you off in the middle of traffic? How well are you able to control your emotions? And then the second part is, how well are you able to tap into and understand the emotions of another person? Don't think that's important to your employees, to have a little empathy? Don't think it's not part of a cohesion culture? I did that for you, Dr. Troy, because I know you're listening, all right? So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you say you're doing emotionally? That's your third number. Fourth number is the spiritual number, and you know what? We're all spiritual people. Matter of fact, if you remove the physical, mental, and the emotional, what you're left with is the spiritual part of who we are. And we are spiritual because we connect on a spiritual level, a level that goes beyond our emotions, a level that goes beyond the physical, a level that goes beyond our mental level. It is something that we connect with each other, and sometimes we call it chemistry, but it's actually a spiritual level that we can have with each other. And then beyond that, we live by faith every day, right? You drank your cup of coffee this morning believing it wasn't poisonous. You pushed the button on your car, or turned a key in your car believing the car would start. You walked across the street with a sign that said walk, believing that the cars would not hit you. You made plans for your future believing that they're going to happen. That's all faith. That's all spiritual, right? And then there is, what brings you back to center when you're in the midst of chaos? What brings you peace when it feels like your world is turned upside down? What gives you joy in the midst of your circumstances that don't have joy? Is it God? Is it nature? Is it meditation? Is it something else? And is it working for you? Those four areas are like the air and the tires of your car. If you got one tire, it's too low, what happens, right? If your car veers, it's hard to steer. It's difficult to drive the car. If all four tires are low, what happens? Well, you're eventually going to ruin the car. And speaking of someone who's got all his tires to the right heights, his name is Dave Bookbinder. He's a corporate finance executive with a focus on business valuation. He's known as a collaborative consultant. Dave has served thousands of clients and companies of all sizes and industries. He's conducted valuations of the securities and intangible assets of public and private companies for various purposes. Among the many types of intellectual property and intangible assets that Dave has valued are the human capital assets. During his career, he has provided financial advisory services to client companies for strategic planning purposes. He hosts a business talk show called Behind the Numbers. That's available on your favorite podcast platform. He's the author of the number one best-selling book about the impact of human capital assets, people, on the valuation of business. It's called The New ROA, Return on Individuals. His latest book, which is, it almost sounds like a series, doesn't it? Which, by the way, is The New ROA, Going Behind the Numbers, demonstrates that people are the fast frontier for business valuation. You can find more by going to newroi.com. That's new, newroi.com. You can find him on LinkedIn like I did, at Dave Bookbinder, for sure. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show. Welcome to the first time to New Direction, Dave Bookbinder. Dave, welcome.
Jay, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's dig right in here, and I'm going to dig right into the introduction. You come right out of the book and say, here, I'm here to tell you that the most valuable asset that any business has is an asset that doesn't even appear in the financial statement. It's the people. And I do agree with you on that. And we kind of in the intro talked about a little bit of it, but give us your take on the importance of that valuable asset of people.
Man, there's so many ways to take that question. I'll do my best to answer it and obviously guide me here. But yes, I started out with the lens as a valuation professional, right? In my day-to-day job, I've been valuing human capital for quite some time. And the personal side of the equation is that I was a single dad for about a decade, 12 years or so. And during the course of that journey, I came to realize employee engagement firsthand, right? Personally, because I had the chance to work for a couple of, I'll call them great leaders, who led with empathy. They treated me with respect. They understood that if I had to leave the office at 3 o'clock to go pick up a sick kid, they could trust me that I'm going to get my work done. They didn't think it was a ruse or anything. And they gave me the flexibility I needed. And I realized I would walk through fire for them. I was completely engaged. I also had the opportunity to work with some other folks that didn't quite get it and frankly would roll their eyes if I had to leave and pick up a sick kid at 3 o'clock. You know, hey, it must be nice, you know, I get to leave at three, never understanding what the circumstances were. And in hindsight, I started to realize that they didn't really get my best effort. And then when I think about the way we in the valuation profession value human capital, it occurred to me that I didn't think we told the whole story. We left a lot of things off the table. We don't talk about engagement, and we use a methodology called a cost to replace. And we can get into that if you want to, but the long story short on that whole thing was I wrote a little article on LinkedIn, and also at the time I was doing some contributions for the business section at HuffPost. So put it out there, same words, but a different platform, so it had a different level of cachet and reach, right? And people started to respond to it and show up and ask me, so what are you going to do next? Keep going. What's the plan for this? And I never had a plan for it. Ultimately, it went on to becoming a series, then it became a book, and then there was a second book. So the big takeaway from all of this, Jay, is, and I don't mean to sound flippant about it, but it almost doesn't matter what the individual contribution is to the people bring to an organization, from the standpoint that people don't appear on a balance sheet, as you just said, right? So until people are on a balance sheet, I personally don't think that we're going to get the focus and attention that we rightly deserve and richly deserve. But in the course of meeting these other collaborators like Dr. Troy and others throughout my journey in these two books, what I have come to connect the dots on is that it's this contribution that people bring to the business enterprise value. And if you can persuade a CEO that if they do the right things for their people, it isn't kumbaya, it isn't, you know, add another ping pong table to the break room, but if you actually do really value your people, you'll see the benefit and increased value of your company.
Thank you for sharing that, first of all. I think that helps everyone get a better picture of who you are in terms of how we're going to approach this book, because every one of the people that you've interviewed in this book, and then your own thoughts as well and your own experience, is going to contribute to this conversation that we're about to have here today. And because there are some themes that seem to roll out of this book. There's the themes of the importance of culture. There's the theme of the environment that you put your employees in. There's the theme of the role that leadership plays, how that leadership plays out. Servant leadership certainly is a big part of it. And I know we're going to try to talk about many of those things. Was there one thing for you that stood out that you went, that you got your first big aha moment for you?
Yeah. If there was a moment where I like literally would like slap my hand to the forehead kind of thing, yeah, it was empathy. Empathy was the thing that kept showing up. And I mentioned it when I just talked about how I worked for some great leaders who led with empathy. In real time, I wasn't processing, oh, these are empathetic leaders. It just felt right. They were treating me like a human, like I really wanted to be treated. But in doing the research and in speaking with the various CEOs and other thought leaders that I've had the opportunity to interview for both the book and for my show, and you know, many folks that didn't make it into the book but shared similar stories, what I came to realize was there was a recurring theme here. And some of the research actually speaks to the impact statistically of empathy and what people feel inside an organization, which then, as you say, drives culture. And if you're doing those kinds of things, you get what people call the holy grail of employee engagement, that discretionary effort, which is the going above and beyond.
Okay, so this is going to lead where I'm going to challenge you a little bit. All right.
Okay.
And we're going to have a discussion because I this is where I feel that we need to get more clarity, because I feel like while I believe in this, I do believe that employees are an intangible asset that we need to measure. I feel that we use some terms that are so ill-defined that that I don't think we can possibly measure them at this point. And here's where I'm going with this. I know I have read the Gallup studies over and over again that basically 30% of the people are not engaged. And I have read that engagement is important to productivity. But nobody, and understand, I come from a research, psychology, human behavior, human factors background that insists that if you're going to do empirical research, that if you're going to quantify anything, the first thing that you need to do is operationally define something in such a way that you could take an average person off the street, describe it to them operationally, and they can see it. And my problem has been the word engagement or employee engagement. How do we operationally define that in such a way that an average person can walk into any office and go, ah, that's employee engagement?
Yeah, well, the good news is there are other people who are much smarter than I that have defined it, and they've developed surveys that help to measure that sort of thing. So that's the great news.
Well, but I have not seen it operationally defined. That's been my, because Gallup doesn't even operationally define it in their of what they're doing is they're taking a survey and correlating that this may be engagement, but they're not operationally, they're doing it post hoc.
Yeah.
They're doing it after. They're not doing it before, where a person can go in and go, okay, this is how I know that I have employee engagement. That's the question, because I know you've interviewed all these people and I know you have. What is the operational definition of employee engagement?
So the way I view it, and this is just my own personal take on it. And it's synthesized from things that I've heard and read from others. In a short sentence, the tweetable moment is basically how people feel on Sunday night and about how they're feeling about going to work the next morning. But what it really is, the underpinning is their emotional commitment and investment to the organization.
Okay, so that's interesting to me, because I still don't know how the average person walks into your office. Let's say you have an office of 100 employees, walks into your office and goes, oh, that employee's engaged. Or that person's not engaged. Because to me, because you make a big point, and so does other people in this book, make a point that we can't manage what we can't measure, right? Which is absolutely true. But then how do we measure what we can't define?
Well, like I said, there are others who have developed these surveys, Jay, and they do it. It's on an emotional thing. It's emotional scale, right? About how people feel about how they're being treated at work. Are they respected? Are they valued? Do they have the right tools? Do they have the right resources? And so there's that emotional component. As a leader, I think you know when somebody's engaged or whether they're not engaged based on the way they're performing, the way they're operating. But I would caution you to not make hasty judgments, because a lot of times a leader may look at someone and maybe they're showing up late for the last few days and think, this person's not quite engaged. Maybe they're checking out. Without digging a little bit deeper to understand what's really going on behind the scenes, it could be they've got a sick kid, an elderly parent that needed attending to. So you need to, again, lead with the empathy, understand what's driving the behavior before you can make any hasty decisions about whether you're going to categorize it as being disengaged.
Right. And this is where I think, the listener, the CEO, the founder goes, oh, please, for the love of all sanity, Dave, please define engagement so I know what I'm looking for. Because I want to believe that my employees are engaged. And I know that there's been this definition that, if you have less absenteeism and you have less turnover, that somehow by that lack of, by that association, that means that employee is not at least disengaged. But then, I know you have had guests on who have said, well, the highly engaged employee. Well, how do we measure if we don't know what engaged is, how do we know if somebody's highly engaged or not engaged? That's the question I have, because we throw this term around saying, okay, well, employee engagement leads to productivity, but how do we know that if we can't define it?
These are great questions, Jay, honestly. And like I said, I leave it for the other folks who have developed the research and the surveys around it, because they are developing tools that have measured and have, hate to use that term, correlated, because I know you're not a fan of that, but they've correlated the engagement to the performance. So whether it's the folks at Gallup, whether it's the folks at a company like Energage, which does a lot of great work, the folks at BCAT, the Brand and Culture Alignment Toolkit, they're all doing interesting things around being able to measure just how invested employees are in their organizations.
Yeah, I mean, you feel the frustration though from.
Oh, absolutely. Right? I mean, to some degree, it's like porn. You know it when you see it, right? but you know it how you feel it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing that I think frustrates, because you know I know the SEC has come out with their document, you know, of wanting to evaluate. You know, this intangible capital, which we call employees, right? I mean, that's part of what they want to do. And there has been some other documents that have been released that, and I know that in your business, the valuation business, that, you know, you're trying to figure out how do we evaluate human capital, the human being part of this, as part of the evaluation process, because it's got to be a piece of it, doesn't it?
Well, it should be. Unfortunately, it's lacking in a number of ways.
But to me, then it would seem like we need to have a standardized. I think that's the problem, is that so much of this is not standardized across the board, where we can define these things in a way that everybody goes, okay, we're all in agreement. Do you think that's going to be an issue? Because I think that was the one thing that came out of reading all these chapters in your book. Was that I'm like going, I'm not sure that everybody's in agreement here.
Yeah, interesting. I guess I hadn't really focused on the idea that it was such an amorphous term. You know, in my mind, it was something that was measured by others. It was something that others have been able to quantify. It's certainly, you know, observable and how one feels and so forth. So I guess maybe really just took it for granted that we knew what we were talking about. So you raise a great point here, but I would also offer you this in the spirit of talking about the folks who are smarter than I am and who are doing the great work.
Oh, there's a lot more people smarter than me, so too. I get it.
So I talk about this in the book. There's a group called Irrational Capital, and they have used the underpinning data of thousands and thousands of those employee surveys that have measured engagement, and it's like millions, tens of millions of data points. And they've done the work where they've granularly correlated the impact of the engagement to not just, you know, overall engagement, but how folks feel about different subsets of engagement, you know, with regard to, are they led by empathetic leaders? Do they feel valued? Are they appreciated? And what each of those things then contributes in terms of its impact on the enterprise. And the really cool thing about that, Jay, is that Harbor Capital is using the irrational capital, what they call the human capital factor, in their investment thesis. So the idea here is, if we have done all this work with the surveys and we can correlate and capture the data that shows what the performance of companies look like if they've got engaged versus disengaged employees, they can then create an investment thesis around it, because they believe, and correctly so, can predict which companies are going to outperform the market based on what they're doing around human capital. So somewhere in all of that, engagement's being measured, and outcomes are being correlated to it, even if it isn't as crystal clearly defined as we might like it to be.
This is fun. I'm having a blast with this, because I just think I think it's so important, and I think it's so important that we need to ask these questions. The book is entitled The New ROI, Return on Individuals, Going Behind the Numbers. I'm sure that Dave Bookbinder is going, what the heck? I don't even know why you're challenging me like this, but that's where this is part of the fun that we're doing.
All good.
It's all part of it.
Well, hey, man, I appreciate the fact that you read the book cover to cover.
That's awesome. Listen, I've defiled this book. I mean, it's covered in yellow. So, and I've got tons of notes. We got tons more to do. You're listening to Dave Bookbinder here on A New Direction. Hey, folks, Epic Physical Therapy, my physical therapist, think they should be yours too, by the way. Whether you're recovering from injury, surgery, suffering everyday aches and pains, having difficulty performing activities of daily living, listen, you're a professional athlete, you want to move and feel better, listen, they will provide you with a customized treatment program just specifically for you. So when you want your epic relief, epic recovery, epic results, don't look any further. Go to epicpt.com. It's E-P-I-C-P-T.com. Linda Kraft Team Realtors from 39 plus years helping people transition in life. And you go, wait a minute, I thought they're a real estate company. They are. But you know what? Think about it. Every place you've ever lived has been a life's transition, and they know how to take the stress out of that part of whether you're selling your home or buying your home. So when you're ready to do that, sell or buy, you know what? Start with the people who help in that transition. It is Linda Kraft Team Realtors. LindaKraft.com. LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Dave Bookbinder. His book's a new ROI, Return on Individuals, going behind the numbers. Series of interviews that he has conducted with a variety of people from different areas, talking about how do we really evaluate probably the most important asset that we have, and that is the human capital, the employees that we have. And I think it's important. And Dave, please understand, I'm challenging not just you, but I'm challenging the industry in general, because I want people to kind of come to grips with this of going, you know, we're making a lot of assumptions that we know what they mean, but we really don't. And that's the part that I think the book brings out to me, was especially, you know, when they use the happy employee. Well, how are we defining, how do we know if an employee is happy or not happy? You know, if you measure them after they've just gotten a raise, I'm sure everybody's happy. But if you measure them, you know, when they've just taken away their benefits, I'm pretty sure that nobody's a happy employee. So I'm not sure when we start measuring these things emotionally, when they're doing the measurement, how they're doing the measurement, that there's no operational definition. I get concerned, and I hope you can appreciate my concern here, that what are we really measuring at the end of the day? And then we start talking it, though, as if it is something that everybody completely and fully understands, whether that's engagement or happiness. And then when we add the terms a higher engagement, well, if we don't know what engagement is, how do we know if somebody's higher engaged, and what does that look like? Those are the things that come out of this book to me that I go, oh, man, these are questions that got to be answered.
Yeah, fair points. And look, maybe there is a continuum of degrees of engagement. Mm-hmm. You know, for simplicity's sake, it's engaged, disengaged, and toxic, right? So, but yeah, you're absolutely right. There's the different shades of gray within each of those categories. And with regard to measurement, when you talk about like the folks at Energage who've been doing this for a really long time, and they've compiled the millions of data points that they've gathered, the companies that are truly interested in measuring engagement, however you want to define it, are doing it on a periodic basis. It's not just once a year necessarily, perhaps. It certainly probably isn't going to be timed around key events, because obviously, to your point, that would skew things. But if you do it enough, if you do it often enough, you start to develop patterns and you can start to put pieces together. Yeah. And apparently they have quite well.
Well, yeah, I would like it to be clear, but that's okay. Well, we didn't solve it. I was hoping that maybe we could get a little closer, but we didn't. That's all right too. Chapter 3, linking presence, not presents, but presence to profits. Harriet Stein talked about mindfulness and as an important part. And a lot of people don't want to talk about mindfulness, because mindfulness is gets a little bit, you know, out there for many people. But if I say to people situational awareness, right, and make it a military term, right, then it becomes different. From your talk with Harriet, from talking to her and the idea of mindfulness, how does that contribute to employees and the employer?
Yeah, so I've known Harriet for a long time, and she's really a thought leader in the mindfulness space. And she helped me to really understand that it isn't just a woo-woo thing, right? There is performance-related matters to it. And the other thing, just to, as a point of emphasis, Jay, a lot of these conversations happened around the global pandemic. Mm-hmm. And during the pandemic, when we were just faced with so much uncertainty, I started to realize, certainly in my situation and my coworkers, that there's so much more that we don't know than what we do know. We're all dealing with a million different stressors, whether it's kids, families, pets, income, what have you. And ironically, when we started to talk about people who were not necessarily essential employees, and somebody drew that bright line and even made a case that certain healthcare workers in outpatient surgery were no longer deemed to be essential, yet we were relying on delivery drivers, right? And people in the grocery store work as the clerks. So that really shined a spotlight on me for the idea that it really is about the human capital piece. It's the individuals, it's the people. And being respectful and empathetic, again, to use that term, of everybody that you're working with and that you're in contact with, because as you said at the opening here, you know, we're all spiritual beings. We're all connected, right? We are all human beings, and we all want to be treated the same way, regardless of what our political beliefs, religious beliefs, et cetera. At the end of the day, well, we all just want to be treated with courtesy and respect and decency, right? So Harriet helps to shine a bright light on that. And I thought that it was important to include a chapter on this mental health piece, because when you talk about like situational awareness, you think about it in terms of sports. And I think in the book, we talk about a situation, you know, if somebody's, you know, taking a shot in basketball and they're not aware of where the shot clock stands, or, you know, runners getting picked off of first base because they're not really paying attention. They're not mentally engaged in the moment. They're somewhere else. They're checked out. It impacts performance. And I think you can draw a corollary to how that happens in the business world too, especially again, during the pandemic, when we had so many other things going on, taking up all that headspace.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what we find is leaders who are actually present, right, with their employees, you know, where they're not thinking about 17 other things, where they're actually engaged right there with their employee and have mindfulness of what's actually going on. I mean, that is significant to the employee.
Yeah, and look, you can just bring that home in your day-to-day life. If you're talking to your spouse, a friend, a family member, whatever it may be, how many times are you in a conversation and maybe you notice yourself, you're no longer really there. You're not really fully paying attention. You're not, as you just said, present. So the more present that you can be, the more appreciated that other person's going to feel, for sure. And the better it's going to be for you.
Yeah.
Too many people are listening, not to listen and to hear, but they're hearing, waiting to speak next. And there's a distinction there to be made. So be present.
Yeah, totally agree. Chapter 5, entitled Shifting Values with Claire Chandler. There was a part of this that you talked about leadership ROI, and here's what you say: when we strive to quantify the ROI of leadership, we might be better off to determine the COI, the cost of inaction, including delayed decisions and decisiveness. Just dig into that a little bit, because I found that, first of all, the COI, which was just something I just didn't even consider. Help us think about that in a different way, ROI versus COI, why that might be an important way to think, why that we might be better off to determine the COI.
Yeah, I think that was one of Claire's points about making that distinction. And if I recall correctly, what really she's talking about is an opportunity cost. You know, if you fail to take that shot, just to continue the sports metaphor, right, you don't score on every shot you don't take.
Right.
So
right.
It's the opportunity cost of inaction, and as opposed to really trying to figure out how do we actually define engagement? Just experiment with it. Try and do some things to get people moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I think that's a great thing for people to think about, is because I think we do spend so much time on ROI that we don't spend enough time on the COI, the cost of the inaction. I think that's great for people. By the way, everybody who's on right now, watching, listening, thanks. Appreciate you being out there. If you have questions, feel free to drop us a line. Dave's happy to answer them. Don't ask him to define, though.
I did. It's how you feel on Sunday night when you have to go to work on Monday morning. There's your definition of engagement. And look, at my shop, we run on EOS. And right. when we're doing a presentation on to leadership about why it makes sense to make an investment in a certain thing, you do all the appropriate work around presenting what's the upside, what's the benefit, what are the costs of it. But then we give highlight to a specific, the cost of doing nothing. What happens if we don't do anything?
Right.
And that's often eye-opening. So I think it's a valuable part of the equation.
Chapter 6, Everyone's an Entrepreneur, Nick Bear, who is the founder and CEO of Zaxby's, whose mission statement, by the way, I really love. It's called Make Life Better, which I think is really cool. But I thought his idea of the people that work for him, he sees them as individual entrepreneurs. In your discussions with him, how difficult is that to really make happen in a business?
To think of every individual as an entrepreneur takes a lot of work and a lot of faith and a lot of belief. And Nick is a really unique individual because he believes this to his core. And if you actually listen to the interview or if you do any research on him, you'll see that this is who he is. Mm-hmm. And he believes it in it, and he entrusts his people, he empowers his people, and dare I say, the correlation. But by doing that, he's getting the results that demonstrate that he was right in believing in these individuals.
Yeah, I found this chapter to be just most interesting because he has three things that is unique aspects to running his business. One is servant leadership. The second is the core value to care personally and communicate openly. And two, the power of making mistakes. But this seems like, he seemed really impassioned about these three legs of the stool. Is that what you got from him too?
Oh, he is, without question. Yeah. And if you take a look at anything he's doing on social media, everything he's sharing, that is authentically who he is and how he feels and what he believes.
Yeah. But the risk of doing that, I think, could be very, very difficult to take that risk because, right?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I don't recall how deeply we went into the history of his business in the book, but he had some struggles early on with the business, and he learned a lot as a business owner and as a leader, and came to realize that he can't do it on his own. And I hear that theme a lot from CEOs that oftentimes they feel like they're alone at the top and they really don't have others that they can turn to because they're expected to know all the answers. But Nick firmly believes in empowering other people on his team.
I want to talk about Vic Finnegan in chapter 7. He did logistics, deadlines, and empathy. And I thought this was interesting because, and we talked about it a little bit, emphasizing empathy was one of the subtitles where he says, one of the primary drivers of the culture is a willingness to listen and be empathetic. Life is not without bumps. It is not always pretty. And so he does not want anyone who works for American Expediting, and by the way, he's the owner, I guess he's the owner, CEO of American Expediting, to look back and think that it was not a good experience. And we talked about empathy in the show, and we've talked about it a little bit. But talk about how far we can take empathy, or should we take empathy? Is there a limit to where we should go when it comes to empathy in creating a place for that will enhance our human capital, the human being part of our business?
Yeah, first of all, just a quick little bit about Vic. So Vic was a client of mine, and in the spirit of you know it when you see it, working with Vic, I really got the sense that he truly cared about his people in a different way than maybe a lot of other people do. And that's why it was important for me to try and capture his story for the conversation on my show, and then also to have in the book, because he truly believes that. In terms of how far can you take empathy, Jay, I don't know. Maybe it's a trust and but verify thing, because I'm sure there's always somebody who's going to try to pull the wool over somebody's eyes if you go that way. But I've come to learn not to be cynical when it comes to that stuff. Again, based on my own experience, because I saw how the less than effective leaders perceived my circumstances, and had they just given a little bit of empathy and sought to understand, giving me a chance to have a conversation with them about it, right? It might have changed the way they judged and perceived certain behaviors. So I think if you come at every conversation with the notion that there's good intention on the other side, and assume good intentions, if people aren't answering your phone calls, returning emails, don't make any assumptions and judgments and so forth, but seek to understand.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, I was a college professor once, and you know, I knew students would have excuses that their uncle died. I had some students who I think the same uncle died four times.
Right.
You know, but what I always treated as, if you have to make that kind of excuse to me, then what is so bad about your life right now that I still can't have empathy for it? So I was willing to go, you know, I would tell the student, listen, if this is real, I am so sorry. Right. And it would be a private conversation, but if it's not, and you just need the time off for whatever the reason, just be honest. Cause I can have empathy for, I'm going to give you the break. I'm not going to report you. I'm not going to do right that. I'm going to give you the break, but I would rather have you just be honest with me. And I'm willing to go that level because I mean, I think of empathy kind of like mercy and grace, right? How much mercy is too much mercy and how much grace is too much grace?
Yeah. Well, what was the response you got from the student?
She was in tears because she didn't know what to say because I wasn't angry with her. I just told her, I said, I don't know what's going on in your life, but I mean, if there's something this bad's going on in life, you don't have to make something up. You could just tell me the truth. I'm okay.
Yeah. You told her it was okay to be human and you're good with it.
Yeah. I'm good with that. You know?
Yeah.
And she had tears in her eyes because she, you know, that was not the experience she had from other, you know, professors. And so I was just like, well, listen, you know, I mean, is there something I can do to help you? You know?
I mean, great approach, because unfortunately there's way too many people that go the other direction. Just they're quick to make judgments and
yeah,
put you in a box.
Yeah. And that's a problem. Right. And so empathy, I don't know if there's enough. I don't know if we can ever reach an end point where we go, there's too much empathy. I'm not sure we could do that.
Again, look, there's some data about empathy. I couldn't quote it to you off the top of my head, but I can tell you that it was very high percentage of employees who worked for what they described as empathetic leaders felt more engaged in work, however they defined engaged.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah. And I don't want us to go down this rabbit hole too far where we can't say it. It's just that it's an interesting topic. The book, speaking of an interesting topic, it's this book. It's called The New ROI, Return on Individuals Going Behind the Numbers, written by Dave Bookbinder, my guest today on today's show. You know, listen, it's got a number of great thoughts in here that I think you're going to enjoy. And I have to be honest with you, this is a book that made me really, really think. And so if you want a book that's going to make you think and really challenge you, this is the book for you. You're listening to him here on A New Direction. Folks, Epic Physical Therapy, listen, here's the deal. They offer the most top advanced, top of the line equipment like the Ultra G anti-gravity treadmill, the Normatec compression sleeves, my favorite, the Game Ready. That's just a few. They're trained and certified in the most comprehensive, cutting edge treatments available. Things like blood flow restriction therapy, dry needling, cupping, and that's just a few. Listen, when you're ready for your epic relief, epic recovery, epic results, no matter who you are, from everyday Joes like me to professional athletes, check out the folks at Epic Physical Therapy. It's epicpt.com, EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft Team Realtors, 39 years, known as the legends of customer service. And if you're a real estate agent in the Triangle, Research Triangle Park area up here in North Carolina, and you're looking to hang your license, check out Linda Kraft. They're hiring new agents right now. And you might want to check out Kraft University. In fact, Linda told me just the other day that she had a new sales agent come in and had taken one training from the Kraft University that they do every week as part of the training. And they said, I have learned more in one training than I did my entire career of real estate. That's the difference in what Linda Kraft Team Realtors does. Training, training, training. And they're going to make you successful. I promise you they will. Go check them out. LindaCraft.com, LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with my friend. I hope we're friends. Are we friends? Are we still friends, Dave?
Even absolutely. Okay. Always and forever, Jay.
Dave Bookbinder, The New ROI, Return on Individuals, Going Behind the Numbers. Available bookstores. If they don't have it, tell them they want it. They'll get it for you. Find it on Amazon. It's all over. It's available for you. There's two covers. There's the black cover. The first book was the white cover book. How would you describe the difference between the two books, if you were to describe the difference between book one, book two?
Yeah. So the first book was my journey to prove that people really are a company's most valuable asset. The second book is the collection of conversations that I had on my show called Behind the Numbers. So it's kind of a marriage of the two brands, the new ROI and going behind the numbers.
Awesome. I want to jump into chapter 8 because Captain Joe Sacchetti, who I have not had on the show, but I've tried to get on the show, wrote a book called Guts, Smarts, and Love, Live Your Life the Army Ranger Way. And he says something here, and I want to get your perspective on it because, you know, when I first read it, I was kind of like, and then the more he kept saying it, the more I kept going, okay, I think I agree with him. And that is create a persona. Step outside of yourself and instead think about the character that you're going to create. And and you evidently found it fascinating too, because you wrote a lot about this in this chapter. Talk about that persona that you're creating that leads to leadership, that leads to an effective leader.
Yeah, it's interesting because at first you think, oh, wow, all we talk about is being authentic, right. And now we're going to advocate for creating a persona. Mm. But there's a distinction there because when you show up at work, you've got to find the blend. There's a happy medium, I think, of being authentic, but also being what others are looking for you and expecting you to be based on your role within an organization. So as a leader, you can't be everybody's best friend. But you can be that empathetic leader. So you can be authentic to that extent where you bring your personal characteristics, empathy, humor, whatever it may be, as appropriate. But also you've got to be the leader. You can't just be the buddy and the friend and the pal. You've got to put on that leadership persona and act like a leader as everybody expects you to.
I think this is his quote at the end of this chapter was, never allow people to guess. It only leads to bad things happening and disgruntled employees. The absence of information will always lead to speculation, and that speculation is often wrong, really bad, wrong.
Yeah. 100%. And I know I lived that in the pandemic when I was talking not only with my own colleagues in leadership, but also had the benefit of continuing to work with clients who were able to work remotely, and we're all in the absence of information. I would ask them, so like, what are you conveying to your employees? And I was watching how our leadership was handling questions around all these uncertainties and unknowns. And I think what I saw in the good leaders was they acknowledged that they don't have the answers. You know, look, I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know how long we're going to be working from home. I don't know what this is going to mean for whatever it may be. But we'll continue to communicate with you as we continue to understand these things as they develop, as opposed to either pretending they have an answer or, to your point, saying nothing at all and just ignoring it and hoping that people just disregard it. So yeah, transparency is key.
Yeah, I think the thing that caught my attention though about this was that we make too many assumptions from a leadership standpoint that we just assume that people understand what we mean.
Yeah.
And I don't know, and in the military you can't afford that because it's life and death. So everything has to be so, you know, the military people I've interviewed on the show, everything has to be so abundantly clear. And how much better is it for your employee, right, if they're valuable, if everybody is absolutely 100% clear on what the mission is, what their why is, how they contribute is, why this next thing that we're doing is so important. How powerful is that for the employee?
Oh, 100%. And look, if you're just handing somebody a task, you can tell them, here, go do this and give it to me by Thursday at 3:00. Or you can give them the task and explain to them why it matters, what its impact is to you, what its impact is to the business, what its impact is going to be to the customer. Now they're bought in on a mission. They see the bigger picture. So absolutely.
Yeah. Chapter 9, Better Together, Jim Caruso. He, at the time you interviewed him, he was the former CFO at Aura Health Group, which private equity-backed family non-medical home healthcare agency, had over 14,000 employees. But the one thing that caught my eye in this interview was his hiring and promotion thought, and that was this. His number one attribute is intellectual curiosity, and he says, quote-unquote, somebody has to want to learn and be devoted to lifetime learning. They have to understand why they are doing things and be open to new experiences, thinking outside the box, and developing creative solutions no matter what level they are at. Talk about why that, because this is not how we typically promote or hire, is based on learning, right? I mean, typically, you know, it's the most successful person or, you know, some other attribute, but not based on learning. What did you learn from the fact, from this conversation of learning is what I hire to and promote to?
Yeah, well, Jim and I completely agreed on that, which was the really cool thing. And it's no wonder that he was recognized as CFO of the year. A unique bird as a CFO at the time, because you know, thinking and feeling about people the way he does. But I also advocate, and anybody who I work with will tell you, that what I look for is also intellectual curiosity. I just actually said it in the office last week when talking about, so looking for an analyst, what are the characteristics? Over the course of my career, Jay, I've hired folks with finance backgrounds, accounting backgrounds, you know, the real right fit by the book people, and they don't always work out for a number of reasons. Right. And usually those reasons pertain to, you know, inability to play well with others in the sandbox. It's the human element, right? Mm-hmm. So I shifted some time ago to the idea that for the most part, we can teach the technical skills, mm-hmm. but if they've got the intellectual curiosity, then we can train for the rest. So I'm looking for the intangibles. I'm looking for, just like Jim describes, I'm looking for the intellectual curiosity, the willingness to learn, being a good team player, and just, you know, getting along, because everything else is trainable and learnable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a person whose number, I when I coach folks, I like to give them the Gallup Strengths Finder so I can find out their top strengths and, you know, a Myers-Briggs to kind of get at some of the personality elements when I'm coaching. And when I took the Gallup, my number one strength is learner. That is my absolute number one strength. And it's true. I mean, I designed this show around my strength of being a consummate learner, of wanting to learn. You know, which is why I read every single book from cover to cover every week, because I just want to learn. I just want to absorb and learn more, because I can't get enough. I cannot get enough, you know, and then to learn from you as well, right, to learn more and more from people like you and your experiences and what you're doing here as well.
Yeah, my whole journey is a learning experience, Jay, because right, like I said, right, you know, I come at it from the lens as evaluation professional and how we valued human capital, and it's all about my exploration and my journey, so I'm learning every day as well.
Yeah, I am going to bypass Troy, because felt like we've given Dr. Troy enough
time. Oh, he got plenty of love, absolutely. Yeah.
I think he'll be okay, with it. With that here, I want to kind of just talk about in chapter 14, HR and technology. Let's talk about how those two things are coming together, because the 35 and younger worker wants to know that they want to be a part of something. But then there's something that Keith Campagna says here, and that work, and I agree with him, by the way, work-life balance is a fraud. It's an outdated myth as it relates to how you can work. We need to shift into a life work integrated model. You don't have to think of life or work as two separate things. Give us a minute to talk about that.
Yeah, and again, I think during the pandemic, the aha moment for me was there's a distinction between working from home and living at work, right? So got to get out of the office. But the reality is, and the great news is, we can work from anywhere now. We're all connected. You can take your laptop, you can go into a Starbucks, you can work from your kitchen table, what have you. Bad news is, you can work from Starbucks and you work from your kitchen table and you're connected on your cell phone, because there became an expectation that you're always supposed to be accessible. Right. So the work-life integration piece, I think what Keith would say here is, if he were giving you an example in real time, would be, yes, you can go and watch your kid's baseball game, but you may have to put your earbud in your ear and do a call while you're on the sideline.
Right.
And now you're accomplishing both. You don't have to be mutually exclusive with these two things.
We've done our hour. It's gone by really, really quickly, Dave.
I can't believe it's over already.
Yeah, seriously, this has gone really fast. I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the little bit of debate and the fun with that, but I've also enjoyed this book, and I've enjoyed the people in this book and the characters that you've brought to it, and the insights and just the challenge to me personally of the book. And I really do believe that people will be challenged and will find this book enlightening. Again, the book is entitled The New ROI, Return on Individuals Going Behind the Numbers. Dave, promote yourself, promote your show so that people can learn more about you and where they can get a hold of you and get in touch with you.
Sure, appreciate that. And I can't thank you enough for having me on the program. Look, I am just trying to change the conversation about how people are recognized and how people are treated in an organization. And maybe my hope one day is they're going to be back on a balance sheet and given their just desserts. But appreciate the opportunity. Sure. As you mentioned, the website, if you want to know more about the book or me a little bit, you can find it at newroi.com. I'm on LinkedIn all the time. Everything I've written and spoken about, you can find transparently on my LinkedIn profile. You can also check out Behind the Numbers, as you said, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're looking for any kind of valuation guidance, you can find me at HafleyFlanaganHFCO.com.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave. Stay with me. Folks, you know the show. That's it. But you know what? You're in control of three things, right? And that is your attitude, your effort, and your resiliency. Fact of the matter is, I know that you have circumstances that can be very difficult. But the truth is, you're always in control of your attitude. Take control of it. And, you know, your efforts is tied to your excellence. How excellent do you want to be today? Give your best effort, whatever that may be. And you know what? We all get punched in the gut or punched in the teeth and we get knocked down. But it's up to you to get back up and keep going. That's your resiliency. I know you can, and I know you will. I'm going to be back next week with another great guest. It's going to be another great book. It has to be another great show. As I say to you, it's this. You have a lot of choices. You chose us, and I am grateful for that. Give us a thumbs up wherever on YouTube. Give us a positive review wherever you listen to the show. We really do appreciate it. Drop me a comment and let me know how much you enjoy the show or what you'd like to see different or new. As I say to you all over the world, you know what that is. Ciao, everybody.
A new direction, things are gonna change. You can find the strength to go a different way, yeah. The time has come, your dreams will take you places you have never been before. Find your passion, find your strength, don't worry anymore. A new direction.